Hello and welcome to A Radio Geekly, an hour-long insight into the realm of geekdom. So strap yourselves in, beam yourselves up, and blast off with us into another exciting adventure. Good morning, I'm Just Jess, and I am joined in the studio by some of our collective members. Thanks for tuning in to another exciting episode of A Radio Geekly. I've got Kyle, Rob, and David in the studio. Good morning, gents. How are all of you today?
Doing well, thank you.
Yeah, I got a nice cup of green tea in me, and yeah, I'm ready to go.
Awesome. David?
Right on.
Perfect. Well, today we are going to continue our discussion on gaming. If you are interested in joining the discussion, feel free to email us at aradiogeekly@kboo.fm. Or if you like to talk to us live here in the studio, you may call 503-231-8187 and we can chat with you, give your insights on today's topic, which is card games. Or if you just want to listen and enjoy from the courtesy of your home, your workplace, or in the car, you can do so as well. And if you want to take a moment to like us on Facebook, facebook.com/radiogeekly, or on the Twitters at @aradiogeekly. So today, talking about card games, it's going to be a fun, interesting topic conversation. For me, being an avid tabletop gamer, card games come fairly quickly to the table when I play with family and friends. It's one of those that's easy to incorporate with any kind of gaming style, whether or not you like to play with a couple friends or you're a one-on-one dueling, and we will talk about some of those types of games with duels. But I just wanted to quickly ask all of you that are in the studio today, what are some card games that you kind of remember playing, like a first card games that you ever played, kind of like as a child, or somebody introduced you to a game and you just kind of were like, yes, I really want to play this game forever.
Ooh, point of clarification, are we talking with a standard 52 card deck or
any kind games? Any kind card related games.
I'd say for me, the earliest memory I think is playing Texas Hold'em when I was about in fifth grade.
Wow.
Because my dad taught me.
Okay.
And what he would do is invite his boss over for poker games and invite me to impress him. I think it worked.
Did he like teach you like some skills and like, hey.
Yeah.
Watch my son play. And
yeah, that was the gist of it. And I played a lot of it all through middle school.
That's cool.
And then I remember
Did you play for money?
Collective member Tabitha has just joined us.
Oh, yes. Hello, Tabitha.
But,
sometimes we would. It would be very small increments. Not like, you know, like not like hard gambling. It would usually just be like $5 from everyone and then that. But I didn't have a bank account at the time, you know.
That's still too much for me. I stress out. It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. I get the shakes. I can't play those games.
Yeah. I don't really play those kind of games anymore, or at least I don't go to casinos, because I remember when I went to a casino, it was very intense, because a lot of people playing those card games take it very seriously.
I remember from back like in summer camp in like elementary school, a game called Egyptian Rat Screw.
Yes.
I think that goes by different names depending on like what section of the country you're in, or you know,
similar card game like War.
I want to say, yeah.
It's in that category, I would say.
Yeah,
I want to say it's a little bit more complex than War, where you're not just flipping over and, like, slamming something down and, you know.
Getting red hands.
Yeah. Oh, the joys of summer camp.
Yeah.
But I think Magic the Gathering was the first foray into, wait, there's more than 52 cards.
Wow. Tabitha, David, any card game memories?
Solitaire and Hearts on the computer.
Yes, I was a card game on the computer fanatic. Free Cell, Spider Solitaire. Did you ever play Spider Solitaire?
I tried it once. It was too hard, and I went back to regular solitaire.
Awesome.
I think as a kid, the more physical games, like playing with the babysitting kids, like Slapjack, War, just stuff that you didn't really have to think much. And then as you got older and realized you can do so much more, those games kind of drove me crazy because I want skill. But I think Hearts, We'd play those during our lunch or our breaks at work or pitch. I don't know if that's a game that we play as much here, but in Midwest it was. And then someone was even talking about euchre and pinochle. I haven't really delved into those, but I know those were pretty big too.
Yeah, yeah. Several of those card games that dealt with the 52 card deck are popular now, but back in the day when cards were originated, they came in a variety, a number of decks and a number of cards in the decks. And I did a little research on the history of playing cards, so I'm just going to enlighten our listeners and our fellow collective members for just a couple minutes on the history of playing cards. The first set of actual playing cards was developed back in the 9th century through the Tang Dynasty. There was a princess that actually had historical documents of playing cards with the royal family, which kind of makes sense because it is also historically known that paper originated in China as well. And from there, card games and the development of cards expanded throughout into Europe between the international travel and trading from the 13th to 15th centuries. And tradesmen actually would make profits from this new kind of medium. They would, you know, trade goods and things, and playing cards were actually a new form of good that they could trade and make a lot of money from, because a lot of the cards were hand painted, and so there was some of the development of cards and the elaboration of the actual imagery on each card was valuable because of the hand painted intricacies that people went through.
We were talking about this earlier, but that's actually how Nintendo got its start.
Oh, wow!
Based on my understanding of it. Because in Japan, there are limits on gambling with cards. So the way to do that would distribute cards that were only used with images on them. So Nintendo were able to like get their feet off the ground by just doing like really well-crafted cards, well-painted ones. And then they transition to different types of games and then video games. And, you know, the rest is history.
Right. That's really cool. So there's a connection, too, with that, you know, playing cards, but also video games and gaming just in general, how there's kind of that bridge. That's really awesome. And then with the development of the printing press, you know, Gutenberg and everything, mass market production happened with playing cards. And so the European culture just kind of exploded with this new type of social kind of construct, because it became more of a social interaction, but mostly within royalty, which I found was interesting, that only royals were able to purchase some of these elaborate cards and play. And I'm sure you've seen, you know, paintings and things like that of just the grand ballrooms and people are sitting off in the table playing bridge or whatever card game that they played back in the 13th century. I don't know.
Right, because, I mean, paper products were a highly valued commodity. That's why,
right,
you know, a king's library would maybe have, say, 7 books
right,
in some cases.
Right.
And they were also probably, like, they had the leisure time to enjoy games.
Exactly. Exactly. So while the lower classes were the ones actually producing some of these cards, they weren't able to enjoy them as much as the royals did, unfortunately. And another fun fact that I saw, that throughout the progression of card design, there were several different cultures that adapted their own set of images with the cards, but there were similarities in that each deck of cards that was developed, either if it was Persian or from Britain or from Asia, they all had 4 or 5 distinct suits. So every deck would always have 4 or 5 suits. And today's deck of cards, 52, obviously has the 4 suits. And some of them kind of developed from the early suits from, you know, those early deck of cards. So they had shovels and leaves and hearts, but then now today, you know, you have the spades and clubs and hearts and things like that. Yeah, so I thought that was really cool that they all incorporated some of the similar mechanics of knowing, like, there was multiple suits involved in your set deck, but they could have images of different things. Like, if there was a smaller community creating a deck of cards, they could have more farming elements, so there was more animals, there was more nature scenes. But if they were trying to pitch it towards royalty and nobles, they would paint the kings and the queens or the knave, you know, and something that was very, very beautiful to look at, more appealing to people. And from there, the Europeans adapted their own set of styles and were able to bring it over to the British colonies here and colonizing America. And then from there, you know, it's just the rest is history, you should say. But
I heard that the 52 card deck came from tarot cards.
That is also true. Yeah, because also with playing in the entertainment in the leisure time, like with the nobles and things, tarot cards were a very big industry during that time as well. So people would create these cards with the beautiful images on them, strictly for tarot reading. And so, as you could see today, with today's tarot cards, are still very beautiful, but they came back from that same time period.
Hmm,
yeah.
Cool.
So it was really cool.
Thanks for doing that research and sharing that
with
us.
Yeah, it was really fun. And so now, you know, today with card games, we have several different types. You know, we have the gambling cards, which was a big hot ticket kind of format when people were playing cards. You know, obviously royals had money, so they can afford to lose some money at occasion. So they had the gambling, like the trick taking, the blackjack, that kind of thing. But today's games have expanded to include more like shedding card mechanic. So think of games like Uno, where whoever gets rid of their cards first wins. Or like the war or Egyptian, what is it? Egyptian rat screw. They're titled like accumulating cards. Whoever has the most cards wins. And then, you know, strategy games like Millsborn. Have you guys ever played Millsborn?
Yes, I love Millsborn.
Millsborn. Yeah, I always pronounce the S and you're not supposed to. I can't read French. But it's basically it's a race, but you're playing with cards.
And it's a road trip game.
And you have cards that have speed limits on them and stop and go. And so you're playing these cards and preventing other players from playing cards in their hand. And so it's more strategic. But now we have those types of games, and as well as what we call collectible card games like Magic the Gathering, which we'll be talking about, and also living card games.
Just about to say, those living card games. Ooh.
Living card games.
What is a living card
game? Yeah, Rob, please enlighten us on the LCG format.
So whereas a collectible card game might be randomized in the packs so that you never exactly know what you're getting if you're just buying packs, so it keeps you buying packs at random, a living card game tells you exactly what comes in the packs. So you start with your base set, and where it acquires the living title is then you expand it in known directions. So, for example, Dominion, I think, has, what, 7 expansions? No, it has quite a few. So you buy your base set, and then you might buy the Alchemy set or the... the Hinterlands set.
Okay. So I have played Dominion, and I know those games as deck-building games.
Oh, yeah. It is also a deck-building game. Mm-hmm. Sort of collectible card game versus living card game refers more to the business model that's applied than the actual game mechanic.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or like Android Netrunner, if you've ever heard of that game. That's also a living card game. So everyone starts with their set starter deck. And then you can purchase the decks to improve your deck building, in a sense, too. And also, speaking of H.P. Lovecraft, Kyle, there's the Arkham Horror LCG as well. So, yeah, there's several living card games. It was odd to hear that term because I've only heard of CCG, and so I'm like, living card, what does that mean? Do they like come alive, you know, when you're playing?
Yeah, I'm imagining like Wizard's Chess and the cards like stand up, but Rob, after explaining like the business model, it makes sense now.
Yeah, and so with that, we're going to focus more on the collectible card game mechanic of Magic the Gathering. And for those of you that do not know what Magic the Gathering is, I pulled up from their website the briefing on the description for Magic the Gathering. It was developed back in 1993. In the Magic the Gathering game, you play a role of a planeswalker, powerful wizard who fights other planeswalkers for glory, knowledge, and conquest. You have a deck of cards that represents all of the weapons in your arsenal. It contains spells that you know and creatures that you can summon to fight for you. It is considered one of the grandfathers of collectible card games within that genre, but there are over 17,000 different types of cards for Magic. That is insane.
Wow. Yep. And it's been around for a very long time.
Oh, man. So, Tabitha, please tell us how you got to be involved in Magic the Gathering, because you were quite excited to be able to teach some of our collective members how to play.
I got into it about 10 years ago from a boyfriend, and I've been playing out on and off for about 10 years. I would not say I'm like an expert by any means, but there was a time in my life when I was super into Magic, and still am in a way, but not as much. It's called Cardboard Crack for a reason.
So with Magic, there's obviously a starter deck that every player begins with. And so from there, how do you expand your deck?
So I wouldn't say there's a starter deck because it is you do construct your own deck.
Okay.
And hopefully you would have a mentor to help you teach you how to make your own deck. But you draw your magic from the power of the land. So there are five different land types, and there are five different color types, and they all interact with each other in different and unique ways. And I'm trying to figure out how to say this without getting too much into the minutia, because it can be a very detail-oriented game.
And is there like a storyline behind it?
Some
like a world, kind of like Dungeons and Dragons, where you're entering into the world?
Yes.
Okay.
At first, there wasn't really like an overarching story, but as the company Wizards developed more expansions and more card sets, then they did start having like an overarching story. And so a lot of the cards that you find in the current sets will be like based around the current plot or storyline of the cards, and there are different planets and different kingdoms, and there's like a good side, there's an evil side, and you pick a side and build a deck based upon like the different powers of the different factions, I guess you could say.
Okay.
So when you say a good side and an evil side, maybe you could detail out, like, what goes into a good side type thing?
Well, so the five different colors are black, white, red, green, and blue. And white is the good side. Use white plains as the basic land type, and they're like angels and soldiers, and it's all about very defensive, life gaining. And I guess the opposite is black, which is based on like death, decay, swamps is the basic land type, but you'll see lots of like demons. And you will find lots of making your opponent discard. And you'll also find lots of cards that ask you to, like, sacrifice something, but you'll get something, like, even better in return. Red is based on, like, fire, anger, and rage. So and the basic land type is mountains. Blue is based on, like, it's trickery and manipulation, but the islands are the basic land type, and green is based on, like, growth and nature, and so you'll see lots of, like, big 6/6 creatures, and the basic land type is forests.
It sounds like a lot of the same themes that I don't know where the driving force behind Magic or what Magic has inspired, but it's obviously in everything fantasy, like every role-playing game, every video game. It's always, you know, maybe it's just blue is water and you have water creatures, white is good, black is bad. It's kind of, I mean, we see this everywhere in all of our games. It's just like second nature nowadays.
Yeah. And I was just going to comment on that, on how the kind of like archetypes of the different types of cards are very prevalent in a lot of fantasy realms.
Yeah, and like the four basic elements.
Right.
A lot of Tolkien type inspiration.
Right.
So you just kind of, whatever the backbone is to this game and everything that kind of flows between fantasy. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's funny that you should mention the backbone of the game. So the gentleman who architected this game, a guy by the name of Richard Garfield, he has a doctorate in math.
Wow.
So
and when you get into the game, it's kind of obvious that it was developed by a mathematician.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Among other things, before this word was so loaded, he also designed a game called Jihad, which functions actually even more in a more complicated way than Magic, but you find a lot of the same elements like tapping, you know, a diversified number of suits, really specific abilities. It's mm-hmm. almost it's really difficult to play. But Magic, for because it was architected so precisely in the beginning, it's been able to grow to be 17,000 cards.
17,000.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you don't get that type of scalable architecture just by like I'm going to guess at doing this.
Right.
No.
Right.
I was looking on Wikipedia information about Magic the Gathering, and I found an entry that said it was Turing complete, which I thought was really interesting, and it led me on this little rabbit trail of, what does Turing complete means? And if I can explain it in very basic understanding, it means it's a very logically complete, closed system.
Okay.
If there are any folks out there that can better define it than me, by all means.
Yeah. Huh.
When I hear Turing, I think Turing test. Is it related to that? Is a life its own life? Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Well, that's very interesting to have that. So it's kind of more complete. So even though there's thousands of cards, there's actually a complete world or realm or...
Yeah.
Okay.
I hear that the Wizards of the Coast, they develop lots of sets 3 or 4 years out.
I see.
And so it seems like they really develop the plot. There also used to be novels that were trilogy novels that were interwoven with that were simultaneously released with the card sets.
Okay.
Oh, yes.
I don't know if they still do that.
I don't think they still do it because they have such a deep story being developed inside the game itself. Because
I read some of the novels.
Yeah.
And have some of them somewhere in my library. But
I was going to say, one of the things that, from my looking at the game, is they wanted to not set the bar. It's been around a long time, and there's a threshold. And so many of these games fizzle out because... people get in on it early, they have the rare cards, and it's no fun to play because suddenly you're
dominating everyone.
You're priced out of the game, literally, because people, and then, you have those tournaments, it's no fun. And Wizards of the Coast took that, and they understood that they don't, if there's a card that was too powerful or, rare, they would smash the market with it and take down that card and try to keep the game so it was always on the same ground level for anyone to get in on. And I think we've seen games fizzle out, whether it be the fad or... people just lost interest in things, but Magic has persisted, and I think that's part of the planning to keep the game fun, make it so people want to play and not feel like, this isn't fun anymore.
Yeah.
Speaking
of that, too, I know, David and Kyle, you were playing your first Magic game taught by Tabitha. Give us a little bit, before we play your segment, on the actual gameplay of your initial thoughts, going into it before not knowing anything, or did you actually do some research beforehand when you played?
I've only played one other time before that, and I remember, growing up, in high school and stuff, and David, you just mentioned this, is that it was kind of hard to get into because people designed their decks to, shut down their opponent.
Oh, okay.
But I liked playing this way because it was a really good way to just, understand all of the mechanics of it, pretty much.
Hmm. Interesting.
And I had never played before, but I was at a long high school path of playing Star Wars cards, one of those games that was super popular and fizzled out because of the same reasons of... people controlling the market, but it was fun.
Cool. Rob, did you have something to add for your initial interest into Magic?
Oh, I was just about to say about that overpowered card issue. It's like, I feel old now because it's like, back in my day, a Shivan Dragon was a sweet card. but yeah, Magic has kept it fresh by basically escalating. So whereas back in the day, you would have this card where it'd be one mana pumps it up a little bit and that was awesome. Now you have cards that just roll over whole players in one potential turn if you can get it up to speed. Roll over a player, I mean kills the player in one hit if you can get it going.
Wow.
Yeah, that's one of my major criticisms of the game now, because when I heard about mythic rares, like, what? And now they've come out with this new rarity, which is a mythic rare is like one in every three, and the new one is like one in every box, but it's like a relic or something like that.
Mythic rare with special sauce.
Yeah. And I just think, what? This game is getting like so overpowered.
Wow. Well, if you've ever wanted to experience playing Magic but haven't actually sat down at a table, we have a segment where Tabitha teaches David and Kyle how to play the game and their thoughts, and it's pretty interesting, so we're going to listen to that now.
I am here with Kyle and David, and I am going to teach them today how to play Magic the Gathering.
Let's make radio magic.
Yeah. So tell me how much of the game that you know about.
Never played it.
I was taught how to play once several years ago, and that's the gist of it. The core of it I know is that the rules change as you play.
So let's start with shuffling the decks. David and Kyle have two decks before them that I made. I made them with the express purpose of teaching people how to play Magic.
I think I'm shuffled. How shuffled do you need to be?
I'm going to do one more bridge just because I like the sound.
These cards are unprotected.
It's okay, because for any Magic collectors out there, they are all common cards.
It's going to be a lot of reading, not knowing what I'm getting into.
So you want to let your opponent cut the deck for you, just to make sure no one cheats.
And it is done.
Now, you draw 7 cards.
Drawing.
Everyone starts with 20 life, and the object of the game is to bring your opponent down from 20 to 0 quicker than they can bring you down to 20 to 0. There are 5 different colors in Magic the Gathering. Each of the different colors use different types of land types for mana. So, you can decide amongst yourself who wants to go first.
Want to roll our dice?
Okay.
All right. 6.
I guess I go first. I got 18.
Mm-hmm.
So, for you to go first, you do not draw a card, but you can't do anything without playing mana. It's best to play a land first. Play mana first.
I only have one land, so I'll put it down. It's a forest.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you have the red-green deck. And so I'm going to assume that, Kyle, you have the blue-white deck.
I'm not telling you what's in my hand, but maybe.
Okay.
I'm not going to say yes, but you're the one who made the deck, so you would know.
Exactly.
So I just laid down a card and that's my turn?
Yes. For the land to, I guess, work, you have to tap the land. And most players do that by just turning it sideways to show that they're using the land to cast a spell. And
okay, so I put down a land. It's my card, but anyone can use it?
No, only you can use it. If you have a spell that costs like 1 green mana, and you can tell what the mana cost of the spell is by a symbol in the corner.
Okay, and I see like some of my cards have more than one, so that means it takes 2 to put it down.
Exactly.
What about numbers beside those? Of those?
That is colorless mana cost, and that means you can tap any mana color. It doesn't matter what color to play those numbered.
Like, okay, I got that.
May I take a look at your hand, David?
Go for it.
Oh, you can actually play this card because he only costs 1.
See, now I didn't know I could do more than one thing. That's...
Oh, sorry. So
it's like it's like doing radio and a game. It is intense multitasking.
Yeah.
But I think we can do it.
I think we're going to do
it. I believe in us.
Okay.
All right. Well, since I do have this card that only costs 1, I just laid down my forest, which gives me 1. I'm going to play this creature, the Snake Shaman Scout. So simple enough. I'll put it onto my forest I put down. So now I have that.
Actually, the way this works, you tap the forest.
Okay.
And that means you're like using the magic of the land.
So what is the card you drew? What does it do now? Does it attack me in anything? Or is it
just
being
drawn out?
I think
it just sits there. She's just a scout,
so,
I guess.
So since you played a creature, this is a good time to explain creature spells. The casting cost is in the upper right. The name of the creature is in the upper left. Creatures, some of them have a special ability, such as the Sakura Tribe Scout. There's a little symbol next to it that's the tap symbol. And you can tap it. You may put a land card from your hand into play. It's a cool ability. But the creature is a 1/1 creature. and you'll see its power and toughness in the lower right-hand corner. So that's how much damage it can deal, and that's how much damage it can take. However, you can't attack with it right away because creatures, when they come onto the battlefield, they have something called summoning sickness. So that means they can't be used to attack the turn that they are summoned, unless a creature has haste. But that's a different issue that we will address it when we, if or when we get there.
Okay, so I have nothing else to do. My land is all used up. My one thing I could deploy with it is down, so I'm done.
Yes.
All right, your turn.
All right.
So, Kyle.
Let my reign of terror begin.
Since you're going second, you can start drawing a card.
Oh.
The player that goes first, they can't draw on their first turn. And then you should also play a land.
All right. This is for educational purposes. I'm going to put insight to what's in my hand at the moment. Half my hand is just a certain type of creature, and the other half is a certain type of land, and they don't really sync up. So should I just put the land down?
Yes, you should play a land.
All right, then I put down basic land, plains.
So regardless of whether you can do anything with it, you should always put a land down if you have it?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm. Land is like the most powerful card in Magic. It's the most basic, but it's the most powerful because without land, then you can't do anything. So Kyle played a plains, and I did look at your hand, and you are done.
Mm-hmm.
That was easy. So his land is still vertical, untapped.
Mm-hmm. Precisely.
Now I'm back. What was the first thing I do? I draw one card?
Yep.
Okay, this is what I drew. I don't think I can play it because I don't have a land there. I need that. Is it untapped now?
Oh, yes. Sorry, your draw phase, your untap phase.
Okay, so I just drew my untap phase, so my horizontal land. Mm-hmm. I turn it back to vertical,
mm-hmm.
so it means it's unused. I can use it again.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't use it based on what I drew. I have no other creatures to play with this thing. So what's next?
You can attack Kyle.
That's what I want to do.
Okay.
So Kyle's totally vulnerable. He has nothing.
Yeah, he has Precisely. Nothing blocking him.
I will attack.
Bonk. Now I'm down to 19 life points.
Oh, that's what this is about. I attacked, so she has a 1-1, so she mm-hmm. can only deal 1 damage.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so I draw a card,
yep.
put down Sage Owl.
It has summoning sickness.
I have been not attacking.
That ability only triggers when it enters the battlefield.
I think I can do things now.
Wording is very important in Magic cards.
You are not guiding us
I'm
here.
I'm sorry!
I attack with the Owl.
I would suggest discarding.
This Blade Master will attack.
I will sacrifice my asp.
All the creatures that you attack with, they all attack at once.
I think we've started to get into a groove now. Yeah. I think.
You can play spells before or after your attack phase. You might want to play that card.
I want to play you. I'll take you down after I learn this.
Okay.
I'm down to 14 now.
And that is the end of my turn.
My turn. I am drawing my card.
Some creatures don't have summoning sickness.
Oh, so I could tap him right away as well and attack?
Whoa.
Well, in that case, I will tap this creature. So I will attack with all my creatures. One of them is unblockable.
These two are attacking.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And this one's just having its ability activated.
Yes.
Exactly.
Okay. If it's just one, I'll take the hit to the life. So I'm down to 17.
Yoink.
Kitsune Blade Master.
There are some spells that do direct damage to the opponent.
Sage Owl attacks.
The Sage Owl would do its damage directly to David.
Attack. I will attack with all of my
They all guys. Attack at once.
Attack.
Can you please say what his power and toughness are?
Summon another Blade Master.
I don't know exactly what good this ability is.
Oh, shut up.
I'm going to attack.
You might hate me, David, but you could actually attack with everyone since David is undefended at the moment.
So I will attack with the two owls, each dealing 1 damage.
Does he kill me?
If Kyle so chooses to block, he
so
will
So he can
kill.
Basically kill any one of these
guys. I'm blocking one person. Block the one that is unblocked. But I'm going to take him out.
Ooh.
You may have the makings of a good magic player, David.
Okay, I'll go ahead and play this then as well.
Are you targeting Kyle or
the card says shock deals 2 damage to target creature or player. I guess it's a math game.
3 gentlemen are attacking at the moment, and that is the end of my turn.
Magic can get really complex.
Well, let's just wait until I can kill you. I'm gonna kill your guy.
Oh!
Yes.
Blade Master.
I'm sorry. I promise you, I made the exact same amount of mono ratio in both
Kyle's
decks.
Kyle's got so many more cards on the table, and I'm like, I have his hands full.
It could be all your mana's like all clumped in the middle or at the bottom or somewhere.
Right. Oh, yeah. Attack with the two owls that I have.
Do I draw the card and then scry two?
This is a casual game, so I'm not going to worry too much. And this is just to teach you how to play.
It's educational.
I'm not going to worry too much about, like, rules lawyer.
And so that's all. Those are all the things I can do at the moment. So my turn is.
That's such a stupid thing to do. I should have played that card that killed his guy. It was a waste of a card. A waste of everything. I'm playing a card. Ta-da.
Whoop.
I will attack. Attack. Take your damage.
The Rager also has the ability to kill the Chimera as well.
It does.
All right. Use the Rager to attack. Take 4 damage. The owls are tapped.
Which blocking will mitigate your damage?
Yeah.
That's me. I'm done.
But without mana, you wouldn't be able to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Oh, so I can put them anywhere on the deck, not just rearrange them and then put them back on top.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorcery, another one of those things you can do anytime during your turn.
Yes.
It's like one of the three phases. Attack, and then sorcery. Put down another Blade Master because I missed
him.
Now it's my attack phase.
You hit me with your owls.
I'm going to go with the owls.
Okay, my turn. Can't do anything. So I will attack. I will attack. I'll attack with my asp.
My main reason for keeping Blade Master on the field is sentimental. We've been through a lot together.
So take the hit.
To me, this seems like an epic part of the game.
Gonna block or take it?
I'm going to block.
And I'll do this. 3 damage to each opponent. I'm down to 5 and you're down to
10.
Your turn.
All right. Things are untapped. Drawing a card.
You can attack.
I'm going to attack. Attack with the Sage Owl. Another preordain where I get to scry 2 cards and then draw a card. So I'll be doing that.
All right. My turn. I'll go quickly. But I will attack with my Raging Goblin.
Rage! Kyle played Indomitable Will.
So I just die.
The Raging Goblin dies. The Augury Owl does stay because you boosted him, and the enchantment stays on the owl.
Oh, okay.
Forever?
That is another example of a non-creature spell.
Well, that should end the game faster. That's it for me. Your turn.
I'm going to attack with both.
So I'll go down 3 again, so I'm down to 1.
And that's the end of my turn.
All right. My turn. I have 1 chance, I think, here. And I blew it.
What did you draw?
I drew this. A land. Aww. The wrong kind of land. Let me draw a different one.
Well, can I see your hand?
It's over. It is over. Tell you now. It's over.
We'll say you played that. Let me see your hand.
There's nothing I can do. Well, okay. I can do this.
Yeah. See,
wait,
exactly.
I don't like that
gasp.
Oh,
my gosh. Well, that changes everything.
Yeah, you can tackle them and play that.
Okay, well, I will attack with my 2 creatures. So that is knocking down. One's 3, one's 1, so that knocks him down 4. He can't do anything about it.
Mm-hmm. Now I'm down to 2.
And then this does change everything. I'm going to Sorcerer, deals 5 damage to a target player. I use up all my mana to do it.
David played Lava Axe.
No!
So I'm at 1. He is at 2. I just dealt 5 damage.
Yep. You won.
That's the sound of my kingdom of magic cards crumbling.
Whoa. I should just look at my cards. I was looking at this one. I thought if I drew a...
Oh.
Shoot, David. Good game. That was a lot of
fun. It was down to the wire.
Yeah.
I did not expect that. Mm-hmm. Kyle, for real. I thought it was over one way or the other.
I was since we have to wrap up soon, I was kind of hesitant. Like, should I use one to block just to be safe? And I was just like, no, it'll be fine. It'll be good.
Okay, so I guess, so my thing about this game, right off the bat, I can tell you, I really enjoy the math. I enjoy being able to think about numbers and calculating and predicting what he has. The fact that we have no idea what our cards are, having never played with these decks or knowing anything, puts us both at a severe disadvantage, but I think we picked it up pretty quickly. At least I felt comfortable.
Yeah, you too did.
You told us how to do it, and I would feel comfortable doing it again with very minimal guidance at this point, except for I'm sure there'd be things that would come up.
I'm definitely willing to do this again. I really liked everything you have to factor in when you make decisions and how the dynamic changes as you go. That's what appeals to me, especially when you're new at the game. But yeah, I definitely see why people were into it.
All right.
All right. Should I go play some Magic?
The next game will not take 2 hours.
Or it might. You never know.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. The fun ones. Mm-hmm. Cool. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thank you.
And there you have it. If you ever wanted to know how to play Magic the Gathering, there was a little insight from a 2-hour game that we actually edited down to 14 minutes. Great job, you guys. So now, David and Kyle, since you've played Magic, what are your thoughts on it? Would you play it again or not?
I think I've laid it out there. I enjoyed it. I'd do it again. Sure.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
It's a fun night. I would like maybe get some snacks.
Ooh.
That seems more appropriate. I agree with that.
Being fueled with, you know, physically can help.
Just salt and sugar to drive your decision making.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Because salt and sugar does that for everything.
You could color theme that. Oh, yeah. Like, oh, what was that? A blue and what deck? Blue and white?
It was a blue-white deck and a red-green deck.
Also, like, blueberries and marshmallows or something? And
the orange deck, because it's covered in Cheetos.
Yeah. Everything. All those sticky things. I've learned playing games that you should avoid snacks that leave residue of any kind.
Oh, my. Oh,
because
yes.
Because components can get damaged and people can get very, very angry.
Unless you eat the snacks with tweezers?
Yes.
Like Cheetos?
Yes. Or unless you sleeve your cards. I have a lot of people now that are sleeving their cards.
I sleeve my cards. When I first got into Magic, I was like, oh, I'm never going to be one of those players. And then it's like, okay, I'm going to start sleeving my cards.
You've also uncovered one of my dirty secrets. So I've taken to eating otherwise finger snack mixes with spoons. And I call it my man cereal. Like Gardetto's with a spoon is just like, this is perfect.
Wow.
I don't have to wipe off my hands or touch my mouse. Like, but actually one thing I wanted to note, because I thought it came out in the game we just heard, so while the top price for a card of the 17,000 currently is $30,000, that's for the Black Lotus.
Still?
I was about to ask how much it was going for.
The Black Lotus.
Insane.
Yes. So while that's a thing, people actually pay that. There is also there are two formats that were specifically put together to help ease the sort of cost of entry to Magic, and they're actually formats. So it's called Peasant, and the other one is Pauper, right? So both of these formats work with a drafting block. So you'll say get a pile of cards in the middle of the table, and everybody will take a stack out and pick a few out that they want to use, and then rotate through so that people build their decks as the first step to that. But you're drafting from all commons or commons and uncommon cards.
Hmm.
So cards with less than a 10-cent value.
Okay.
So it sort of helps ease that pressure to spend a lot of money up front.
Wow.
There's also the draft tournament format called drafting, which I also really appreciate and is also really a great low entry point for Magic or for new Magic players, because constructed format, it can get really expensive, but drafting I think is perfect for a new player or that would like to try a tournament out.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting to talk about, expenses of cards, because a lot of times these cards that you're collecting do cost a lot of money. And one way I know that a lot of game designers are going through to make that a little more affordable is through Kickstarter campaigns and crowdfunding and things like that. And we're fortunate enough to actually have a game designer on the line who has developed his own set of card games and wanted to get his insight on his Kickstarter campaign, his company, and a little bit about why specifically card games. So I want to welcome Tucker from Card Lords. Hey, Tucker, how's it going?
Doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Awesome. So for our listeners that don't know about Card Lords, why don't you give just a brief summary about your company and how you guys got developed?
Yeah, absolutely. Card Lords actually started out in about 2011 as a online retailer for similar to Magic, but the World of Warcraft trading card game. We did a lot with the singles and sales online, and then in 2013, we completely shifted focus and started developing token cards. And you'll see it in Magic as well, but cards say put a token card into play. Well, what they usually mean is put like a dice or something to represent a card. We actually developed token cards and put top-notch art on them, and everybody loved them. And then in 2016, we started developing our own full games, and that was our first game was Battle Goats.
Very cool. And so you were featuring some of those games at GameStorm here last month, and I was curious to know, why were you focusing for Card Lords? Why strictly only card games and not board games? Because I know GameStorm is a very heavily like tabletop board gaming convention.
So card games themselves, I really like the portability aspect, the ability to just bring a deck of cards or a game with you that you can toss in your pocket, throw in a purse, toss in a backpack, and have no setup time. I do like some of the board games that require a long setup time, but having the ability to just pull it out and play, not sit there for 2 hours, is really a key for me.
Totally, totally. And so with the card games that you're developing, what sort of, not only with the portability is kind of a factor, but what sort of audiences are you trying to draw with? Because I know with Battle Goats and then with this upcoming Kickstarter with Take the Gold, the designs and the cards themselves, the artistry is very appealing to all types of audiences. So I was just curious to see, what were your main focuses when you develop one of these games?
Yeah, so Battle Goats was our first one that we really tried to bridge the gap between casual and hardcore players. I personally was a huge TCG player, but my girlfriend is definitely not. She's a casual gamer.
Can you describe what TCG is?
Oh, yeah, sorry. TCG is trading card game.
Oh, okay,
cool. So that'd be like Magic the Gathering or World of Warcraft trading card game or the Pokemon game, stuff like that.
Cool.
I really enjoy those, the ones with more complex gameplay and depth, and she'd never played any of those, so I wanted something she could get into. And by putting, you know, the super creative, super cute, fun art on it, it lightens it up a bit. But it also makes it where the gameplay can be, every single game is unique. It's always different. Every card in the game is unique.
Awesome. And explain a little bit about the two games that you have out right now. So Battle Goats and then the Kickstarter for Take the Gold. What are the differences between those games?
So Battle Goats is a 2-6 player modern combination of War and Memory. And in Battle Goats, players take turns alternating in card battle, and you determine a winner using highest number value. The number values are on the top of the card, but there's modifiers and abilities on the bottom of each card that change as the game goes on. And like I said, every card in that game is unique, so every game's different. And like you were talking about earlier with drafting, Battle Goats has a killer drafting component where you can actually build your battlefield on the fly because it's only 9 cards, but then every game changes. And then Take the Gold, the one that we do have on Kickstarter right now, it's actually doing really well, so appreciate that. Anybody listening, thank you. It's aimed at a little more casual audience, and it's really perfect for families and casual gamers. It plays in about 5 to 10 minutes. In Take the Gold, cat pirates are trying to steal gold coins while corgi officers attempt to stop them.
Aww. Amazing. That sounds adorable. Where can we find these games?
So for Take the Gold, like I said, it's on Kickstarter right now. If you're interested in Battle Goats, several of the stores up in Portland do carry it. But if you want to take a look and just read more about it, you can find us at cardlords.com and on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at cardlords.
Awesome. And all of your card games aside, do you have any favorite games that you like to play?
Since I started developing, I've spent more time actually working on and playing my own games than anybody else's, but there's a few that I would say Sushi Go or Oregon Trail card game are some of the more popular ones.
Oh, nice. Being Death by Dysentery. That...
Yeah, absolutely.
I love Sushi Go. That's so much fun.
Awesome. Well, thanks, Tucker. I'll let you get back to your day job here. But once again, it's cardlords.com, and they can find links to your Kickstarter and everything there.
Yep.
Perfect.
Absolutely.
Perfect.
I'm going to look for Battle Goats.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually got to play Take the Gold at GameStorm, and that was really fun to kind of see it in the flesh before a Kickstarter. So yeah. Thanks, Tucker, for letting me preview that.
Absolutely. I enjoyed having it.
All right. Have a good one.
Thanks. You too.
Thanks. So fun games to look forward to.
I know.
Kickstarter is always a great platform, I've seen with a lot of the game designers. So it's just like,
I'm still stuck on those corgis.
You should check out the pictures. They're super cute. It's kitty pirates and, you know, corgis and everything. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. It's amazing. But as we're getting ready to wrap up, I wanted to just to briefly talk about some upcoming events that are happening here in town that you can check out for the month of May. Tonight, if you're interested in the Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Oh, yeah.
Which is on Netflix.
Yes. It just released on Netflix. I know. The Trace and Frank from Mystery Science Theater 3000 are going to be performing in front of a live audience tonight at the Alberta Rose Theater. They did last night as well. And it's, the show is called The Mads Are Back. And you can find out information on Facebook, facebook.com/TheMadsAreBack, M-A-D-S, are back. Did any of you ever watch Mystery Science Theater growing up?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's one of those things where I heard about it fairly recently, and now I can't stop hearing about it because apparently a lot of people I know are super into it.
Yeah.
So I'll probably watch it at some point soon.
Yeah. David, are you?
I remember when they... My first encounter with them was when they actually went to Sci-Fi Channel. It was like the second generation.
Oh, nice.
Late at night, you know, whatever that time was, 1 a.m. where I was or something.
Very
like
cool.
Stand-up play is great.
Yeah, so there possibly are some tickets still left, so check on Facebook for that. Also this weekend, the second annual Wagon Con is happening out at the Dalles, if you guys like to drive, and that's the only board gaming convention in the Columbia Gorge. So if you live out in that area, or if you're like, you know what, I want to drive out of the city for the weekend, why not stop off at Wagon Con?
And it's not a huge drive. I just looked it up. It's like an hour and a half away, tops.
Totally doable.
Totally doable.
Totally doable.
Get to see something new, see something different, figure out, you know, where is that place that is labeled the Dalles that's on all of our road signage.
And why is it called the Dalles and not just Dalles?
Indeed.
Yeah.
That is a good question. but avid KBOO listeners may be hearing the promos and are...
Featuring our lovely collective member, Tabitha. Yep. We were like, oh, I think that is Tabby on the radio. So that's happening May 5th through 7th. So today, tomorrow, and Sunday at the Dalles Civic Auditorium, wagoncon.com. Or if you want to stay here this weekend, not drive out to the Dalles, you can attend PDX Age, another board gaming convention here at the Holiday Inn Conference Center, also today, tomorrow, and Sunday at pdxage.com for more information about that. The Hollywood Theater will be hosting the Northwest Animation Fest on May 10th through the 14th. Information about tickets and panels and things of that nature can be found at nwanimationfest.com.
I'm so excited for the Animation Fest.
Yeah?
I remember I tried to go to some of those shows last year, and they sold out really quick.
Oh, man.
And
so get your tickets now?
And the only one I went to was a screening of Coraline, where they had like the live actual Coraline figure.
That's cool.
That you can like, right?
I just watched Coraline last night because I was it's just one of those. I love it's the great. Leica. The stop animation stuff is just fascinating. Mm-hmm.
They do have one free thing with that fest. It's the OPB Laka documentary that they did. I think it's at noon on Saturday or one of those days.
Okay.
Okay.
So. Very cool. Very cool. May 11th through the 24th is the KBOO Spring Membership Drive. If you enjoy what you're hearing here on the Radio Geekly and other programming on your community radio station, then become a member by joining us at kboo.fm. Click on the donate button, or you can become a member during the drive and get some cool stuff. We have awesome thank you gifts and things that you can partake in: concert tickets, hoodies, because you know it's cold and rainy outside, which is really odd because it's May, but more cool things to be a part of our community here by joining and becoming a member May 11th through the 24th here. And finally, for the Memorial Day weekend, there is the Meteorite and Family Fun Day at the Rice Northwest Museum of Rocks and Minerals out in Hillsboro. You can see live meteorites, rocks, minerals, and you can touch them.
Live.
Will they have a moonstone?
They might. Ooh. They might.
Or
it just looked really cool. It looked really cool. I was just like...
I've heard those things grant special powers occasionally.
Oh, depending on your mood.
Mm. What about during the solar eclipse that's happening in August?
Oh, yes. So maybe if you touch them now, it might resonate all the way through August, through the summertime. You never know. Never know. Well, thanks all of you listeners for tuning in today on Radio Geekly. I want to thank all of my collective members, David, Tabitha, Rob, and Kyle, for joining me. I learned a lot about magic. I think I might go and take you up on that offer, Tabby, on learning how to play, because it just sounds intriguing. I did get into like the Pokemon card deal back in like middle school, but I never knew which cards were cool. I just wanted to collect the Pikachu and Squirtle cards because they were just so cute. Oh, man. So stay tuned to your community radio station here at noon. We've got Moving On. Next month, we will continue our discussion on gaming. We might focus on LARPing and RPGs, or we might transition into video games or other types of games. Who knows? Lawn games? Anybody Ooh. Play any lawn games? Cornhole friends?
Lawn darts.
Lawn darts. Bocce.
Croquet.
Oh, my goodness.
There was one mention I did want to say. I think tomorrow is Free Comic Book Day.
Free yes. comic book day. Where?
Oh, that's important.
You can look everywhere. I know Beaverton Library is doing a thing with Kathy Camper. She's one of the local graphic novelists here in town.
Nice.
So we got that. We interviewed here for Between the Covers. She's pretty nice. So,
very
yeah,
cool.
But look around. Every comic book place, they're going to be doing it.
They're so. Having some sort of sale also, as well as passing out the free comics too.
Free comics. Mm-hmm. Oh,
I like the word free.
All right. Well, thanks, everyone, for tuning in to Radio Geekly. I'm Jess. Enjoy your weekend, and we'll catch you all next month.